Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Bear witness to the first home win at Stamford Bridge for 5 months as Chelsea leave Luton as mad as hatters. It's Saturday the 26th of August and a very warm welcome to Ramble React. I'm Luke Moore.
I'm Andy Russell.
Yes, 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 indeed. Welcome. A very happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you are listening to this on the way to a game or, I don't know, doing the shopping or mowing the lawn or whatever. Andy, great to have you here on Ramble Reacts. No Marcus today, but we'll press on without him. It's what he would want, I'm sure.
It's not what he would want.
he'll boycott this episode. Let's make that absolutely clear. Andy, you said yesterday on the Ramble, I wasn't present but I listened to it, Luton weren't going to get beaten 10-0 by Chelsea yesterday, and they weren't, of course, but they were beaten 3-0 with two goals coming from Raheem Sterling and a first for the club for Nicholas Jackson. First off, what did you make of the Chelsea performance?
It was okay. It was positive. It's a little hard to judge exactly how good it was.
I thought that.
Given the opposition, and given, I think the Raheem Sterling opener was sort of in microcosm, really, in that it was a really great goal, but you were left thinking how many other Premier League sides would he actually have the opportunity to score that goal against, the way he sort of waltzed through unfettered. Look, like I was saying on yesterday's Ramble, I don't want to jump to any immediate conclusions about Luton just because they haven't spent money, because I didn't see a huge amount of them in the Championship last season. Maybe that naivety will have the edges come off it as we get into autumn. But already it does look a little bit tough for them. And as someone whose team is going to Stamford Bridge on Wednesday night, I thought Chelsea were good, but I'm not frightened by it. And I support a League Two team.
I think you're going a bit far there. I think that's good. That's exactly the kind of comment that I may not know that much about broadcasting, you know. I may be very much an alternative broadcaster, not in the mainstream media. But even I know that's the kind of comment that's going to come back to bite you
Well, we'll take the 10-0.
Pretty short order. Yeah, exactly. Imagine that. Imagine if you get on the end of a 10-0er, the first one of the season. That would be absolutely outrageous. Look, I thought Chelsea were good enough. I thought that, you know, what I was really keen to keep an eye on was something off the back of what you said yesterday, which was that, you know, at the moment, do Chelsea look just a bit like a collection of players rather than a team, or as you called it, a munge of players? Not a word I was familiar with, but a word I am now instantly obsessed with. And one has to be careful typing that out on WhatsApp, because autocorrect can be a very cruel mistress on that word, let me tell you that. But they did look a bit more like a team. But then the thing is, Mauricio Pochettino's probably rubbing his hands together seeing that fixture, because with all due respect to Luton, and we will come on to them in a bit more detail, that's exactly the kind of fixture you want to get your ducks in a row, right?
It is, and I don't know about you, I thought Pochettino looked a little bit too pleased about it at the end. I mean, I'm glad for him that he got his first win, and, you know, he's a very likable character, and, he, you know, fair play to him, being jolly about it and being pleased to be there and enjoying his job and all the rest of it.
Looking pleased to be there. It's a tough ask at Chelsea, honestly.
But I think the way it was like, oh, yes, we've won. I mean, look, I don't want to be the celebration police, but it is a little bit much, wasn't it?
Don't go full keys.
I think maybe he listened to yesterday's ramble and he thought, well, I'm only going to be here till Christmas. I better celebrate everyone to the max.
Well, and I'm going to come on to asking you about that as well. But, you know, you say that, but, you know, he is basically pumping his fist and shouting to the Stamford Bridge faithful, you know, happy times are here again. It's their first win at home for 5 months, as I said in the intro. So it's not as though Chelsea have been in any kind of form. And I think that sometimes gets forgotten. Mm. You know, you think of Chelsea as being this colossus in the modern Premier League era for all the obvious reasons. They've won what they've won. They've spent what they've spent. They are the team that they are. But actually, it's been pretty thin gruel for a long old time now, particularly at home. It's been a bit rudderless through, I mean, Chelsea fans may argue that, you know, through perhaps no fault of their own around what's happened with the ownership and stuff. I would say, you know, you dance with the devil and sooner or later the music stops, which is what happened. But ultimately, they've been through a rocky patch. And it's not just that Pochettino's got to blend all these players. And as you said, you know, to use that term again, take a collection of players and turn them into a team. It's actually just that they've got to restore a bit of confidence at the club, because they've not really been in any kind of form for a very long time. This is a team that finished in the bottom half of the Premier League last season, right?
Yeah, for so long, Luke. And I was at that last home win, actually, against Dortmund. And Dortmund were...
They do call it the Andy Brassel game, actually.
You see, that's why Chelsea fans...
come back.
Yeah, that's why Chelsea fans can feel confident of winning 10-0 on Wednesday night, I think, because I'm going.
Yeah.
But in that game, Dortmund were off colour, a bit knackered, a lot of injuries, too many injuries, really. And because Chelsea played it straight and just about got it done, there was a sense of, oh, hang on, Chelsea are digging in, we're back. But I think the way that win against Dortmund was celebrated at the time, and I know it's hard to remember for a lot of people the feeling around it, maybe not for Chelsea fans, but for people who aren't Chelsea fans, to remember the feeling around it, because it was like 6 months ago now, the best part thereof. It felt at the time that they were, you know, looking for comfort a little bit too hard. So they pumped that performance up into something that it really wasn't, into a bit more than it was, certainly. And as you say, it's because before, and as it turned out after that, it was just dreadful. And not really just by Chelsea standards, which obviously have been extremely high over the last 20 years, but just by, you know, general Premier League top half club standards.
Mm. And I think, you know, you mentioned the first Sterling goal. I mean, that was... I mean, because when I kind of looked at the lineups and looked, you know, was excited to watch the game, because, you know, the reason I really wanted to do a ramble reacts on this game is chiefly because it was the first chance for any of us to properly see Luton. Of course, their first game they were beaten, but that was a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff, so we didn't get a chance to watch that here. And I looked at the lineups of the two teams. What's that?
What? Didn't get a chance to watch it here because it was a 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff.
It's worth reminding our American listeners of that kind of strange, you know, disappointment still that we have to endure here. But
and it's absolutely impossible. So if you are listening in America and you are watching a 3 o'clock game on Saturday, if you mail us at the Ramble and tell us what the game was like, we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, you'd have more insight than us.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. But going into this game, you know, last night's game, I was just going to say that, you know, you look at Chelsea's bench and it seems woefully light for a team that has spent the best part of £1 billion. I know you've got to take into account they've got 8 or 9 players out through injury. Yeah. But even so, I mean, 2 goalkeepers on the bench, that's what I call the full Redknapp. Never go full Redknapp. You know, what are you sending a message to the owner that he wants to spend more money? And you've got, you know, Lavia from Southampton, they've spent a huge, you know, king's ransom on in the stands. Ready to play a part at some point. They've got all these other players injured. So I did think to myself, if it gets a bit sticky for Chelsea, you know, are they going to have players that can come on and affect the game? Because it didn't really seem like they did. But then you look at the Luton side of the ledger and you think, my goodness me, they look so light. You know, they really do look... I don't know if I've seen a Premier League team that I can think of more light on top-level quality than this Luton side. It's pretty worrying, actually. Maybe we'll come on to a bit later on to what this perhaps means for Luton for the rest of the season. But the point I wanted to make was just that, you know, I, for example, really like Thomas Kaminski in the Luton goal. I think he's a fantastic goalkeeper whenever I've seen him play. He comes very well rated from Blackburn, hugely decorated as an individual at that club as well. And he makes that save in the first 5 minutes, which is rifled at him and he catches it. And it was just a superb save. It was Susan-perb. And I thought to myself, he's going to be busy tonight and he's going to need to be at his best. But if he can stick at it and they can dig in, Luton... it could become a really interesting night. You get to half time at 0-0, you get to 55, 60 minutes at 0-0, Chelsea are looking to make changes, but they don't have a huge amount of options. And then, of course, Sterling comes through with this individual goal of such great quality, which almost just shows Luton in stark kind of reality the quality they haven't got. Now, I think Pochettino will be far more enthused by the second and third goals, because of course they were great team goals, and Nicholas Jackson getting off the mark for Chelsea as well is important, but it just shows you the gap that Sterling danced through the penalty area and scoring, and you saying that, you know, you wonder whether any other team will give him that kind of space throughout the season. I suspect they probably won't, but that is really when it started to come home to roost for Luton. I thought that they are in the situation they're in, and it really was then after that just a kind of almost not an exercise, but certainly nothing kind of particularly taxing. And then Chelsea were able to bring on Okechukwu and Matson to give them a little bit of a taste of it. And it turns into a pretty nice night at the office for them, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And I think almost as much as the Sterling goal, the penultimate pass from Enzo, who I thought was excellent, by the way.
He was good. He was.
The little juggle before he flicks it over the top for Sterling to cross for Nicholas Jackson. Again, I'm not sure he attempts that in every Premier League game this season, to be honest. Right. You know, there was a level of comfort there. But I did think to an extent that Luton were a little hard done by it, in the, you know, that they were second best, and, you know, they didn't deserve to get anything out of it. But I would say, you know, you go back to the first half, and really the goalkeeper wasn't tested that much. I think if you look at the first half hour and the bit before Sterling scored, Chelsea have all the ball, but they don't really create that many chances. And Luton are having a game stab at pushing for an equaliser, and 2 and 3 go in pretty quickly, and then that's
the keeper
it, really.
Can't do anything about it anyway, can he? I mean, like, you talk about Kaminski, he can't really do anything about any of the goals.
He can't, but I do think that When you look at those two games from Luton in entirety, they've not been, for all the people saying they're incredibly short of quality, they've not been shown up, I don't think, in either of these games.
Yeah, but it's a terrible habit to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's two games in, and, you know, they've gone away to one of the better sides in the Premier League, and a side who are trying to be one of the better sides in the Premier League, and have spent an absolutely incredible amount of money. I mean, I don't think anyone's forgetting that graphic in a hurry of transfer fees spent since 1992, and it had Chelsea 3 billion Luton 30 million. I mean, it's a little bit misleading, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a nation of people shouting net spend at their widescreens, etc., etc. But I think in both those games, there's been a degree of naivety about Luton that you think at some point that they should, if Edwards is the coach that a lot of people think he is, that will change. I'm not saying they'll avoid relegation. I'm not saying they'll win a load of games or whatever. But this is the hard bit. This is going to be the difficult bit. And of course, I think they're one of the teams who will benefit most from the international break because they won't have 15 players go off. And they can work out what they've learned in the first four or five games and get their heads down and actually get on the training pitch.
Yeah, but it's quite damning with faint praise, eh, to say that they'll be loving the international break because none of their players are good enough to play international football. It's not ideal, is it? I mean, look, I think it's probably a bit too early to use the analogy I'm about to use, but I've just thought of it and I want to use it, so I will.
Please.
You know, you talk about Luton not doing too badly but still getting on the end of, you know, really a slapping from Chelsea and from Brighton. It's a bit like your mate who's our age and is still unlucky in love, and you start to think after a while, are you actually unlucky in love or are you just a dickhead? Because you don't want it to become a pattern, Luton fans, is what I'm saying. And I actually think that, unfortunately, you know, I'm not saying the writing's on the wall because we're not even at the end of August yet. I don't know if there is a track record to suggest that Rob Edwards is that good a coach. I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just saying I don't know if we know.
No,
he
we
is.
Don't know. We don't know.
And I also think that they're going to be in a situation, really, in more often than not, in most games they play, where they're not really going to have a say in whether they can win or not. And what I mean by that is, you know, for example, they are should be, and they probably are, desperate to get to Kenilworth Road and start playing games there because it's very difficult to make an argument that they're going to be able to pick up more than just a handful of points away from home this season, which obviously then puts a massive amount of pressure on what you can do at home. And I think with Kenilworth Road, they can make it a bit of a fortress. I know it's a cliche for a promoted team to say, but they obviously need to turn that into a cauldron. There's no other option. Because you look at that team, they can't really affect a game, particularly at this level. And Chelsea, like I say, haven't really been great. So it's a tough old ask for them. I think it's going to be a long old season. And the reason I'm saying that, by the way, is because I don't want to patronise them. I don't want to say what you know, what Vish said yesterday. It's one big free hit for them this season. Like, you know, get your candy floss on the way home. You know, it's going to be a lovely old day at the fun fair. They shouldn't see it like that because that's a patronising way to look at it. I'm not criticising Vish when he's not here to defend himself, but you understand what I mean. So they need to kind of, almost like a truffle pig, sniff out where they're going to get those lovely little morsels from, and it doesn't look like it's going to be away from home. It's just going to be on their own patch. It's going to be like that's what it's going
like
to be.
Like you, I don't want to butter them up too much, mainly because I've paid.
You're
to
normally
get
a good
into...
cop here, though, Andy. I'm normally the bad cop. You know, so you have to remember that. You got to play your role.
That being the case, I've paid to get into that away end at Kenilworth Road a couple of times. Yeah, you go in between the houses, etc. But you do pay 20 quid and not. You're not able to see anything, even though you're over 6 foot. Luton, Barnett at Underhill is pretty much the same. So
I've got beef here as well, by the way.
Right,
because
okay.
when my team Portsmouth were in the Premier League for all those years, I used to get pelters on the show from listeners and in my everyday life among other football fans who supported other clubs about how shit the away end was, the Milton end at Fratton Park was.
Like you were responsible for it.
Yeah, I don't see why Luton should get away with it. I think if Pompey fans are going to get it, I think Luton fans should get it. And it should just be one of those things. You're going to have to take it on the chin. If you're, I'll be totally honest with you. Pompey's away end at one point barely even had toilets. You know,
right.
It was that poor. And I can't remember going to Kenilworth Road as a fan, so I probably haven't been there, but I have heard very, very difficult reports of what it's like to experience the away end there. But then some people, Andy, may say that you're still a bit sore as an AFC Wimbledon fan, right?
Why am I sore? We beat them in the playoff final in 2011 at Manchester City. It's glorious.
Okay. So you're not sore.
You're smug. Kick by kick.
You're smug. It's even worse. A smug Andy Brassel.
Hold up. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hello, I am Sven-Göran Eriksson, and you are listening to the Football Ramble.
Andy, can I take you back to the can I take you back to the game itself, or just ask you a little?
I thought
bit
you were
going
to say to the FA Cup semi-final in 1988, where we also beat them that time at White Hart Lane. Yeah, you may.
I'm not taking you all the way back there. That's the thing. When these new teams come into the Premier League, they've always got a load of undisclosed history with Andy Brassel. I want to take you back to Nicholas Jackson, actually, on the Chelsea side of it, because yes. He looks very busy. He works really hard off the ball, and I know that Christopher Nkunku is injured and is a scorer of goals, certainly since he moved to Leipzig. But Nicholas Jackson, he scored tonight, got off the mark. Obviously, I imagine that's a massive relief for him, and it's important when you go to a big Premier League club and you for a lot of money, and I understand the pressure will be great. He scored tonight. That's important. But he doesn't look to me like a consistent scorer of goals. Can you disavow me of that notion with, quite frankly, your smug, superior knowledge?
Well, not really, Luke, because we've got such a small sample size. Now, I think you saw him in the back third of last season, and you think there's a player who can get on a goal-scoring run. Now, to get on a goal-scoring run and to be a relentlessly consistent scorer of goals are two different things. I mean, he's just in the same category as so many other Chelsea players, in that there's potential to be really, really great. There's enormous potential, but we just don't know how much of that is going to be realised. And if you buy people on small sample sizes, and you know, I could be talking about him, I could be talking about Mihailo Mudrik, I could be talking about Enzo Fernandez, I could even be talking about Moises Caicedo, because he doesn't have like 100 first team games under his belt or anything like that, does he, in the Premier League. That's where Chelsea's strategy is so incredibly high risk. Now, Nicholas Jackson always had something about him at Villarreal, and it really started to come together, like I said, in the back third of last season, where he started to be relentlessly consistent, score goals on a regular basis. And, you know, if he can bring that form into the Premier League, Chelsea will be laughing. But, you know, they've broken better centre-forwards than him, let's be honest.
They break every centre-forward.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's West Ham and then some, isn't it? You know, I think if West Ham are Hawksmoor, Chelsea are Nusret, really, aren't they?
Oh, that is a very good analogy. That is an excellent analogy.
So I don't know why I got my hand up there and didn't go like that.
Yeah, you should have. Yeah. Listen, that point doesn't need any seasoning, mate. That is absolutely perfect to the palate, that. I mean, I would just say that, you know, it's worth pointing out that I think it's now 55 strikers that West Ham have signed, 55 forwards in what would be, you know, termed the Gold and Sullivan era. And, you know, we haven't got time to go into quite how shocking the return has been, but it's been pretty poor. Chelsea has been, you know, on paper, quality rather than quantity. But again, there's been absolutely no quality whatsoever, which basically brings us full circle to talk about Raheem Sterling again, because they are going to be reliant upon him. Mm. It just so happens that he's been in great form, you know, for Chelsea. And I gave quite an interesting interview to the BBC at the start of the season, with a chap called Phil Dawkes, who I don't know, but on the BBC website, saying that he felt like he was in a really good place. He felt like he had a really good pre-season. He's now only, I mean, he's only 28, right? You know, so he's been around forever. He feels like he's been around since God was a boy, but he's not a spent force yet, and he says he feels like he's in really good form. They're going to be reliant upon him, because despite the amount of money they've dropped, and according to some reports, it's 945 million in the Todd Boehly era, they still don't have someone that you just go, bang, he's going to score you goals. They don't have a Kane. They don't have a Haaland. They don't have a Salah. They don't have one of those kind of established Premier League goal scorers that's going to do something for them. And, I mean, I think it's another podcast episode to talk about what perhaps we both think, and certainly I think, about the kind of experiment that this Chelsea situation seems to be. I don't think it bodes well at all for many different reasons, and maybe we'll get a chance to expand upon that throughout the season. But it does feel like if you are going to chuck this amount of shit at the wall, you know, you really do want to come out with someone who's actually going to provide you with almost guaranteed goals. There doesn't really seem to be any reason why they couldn't do that if they want to, but they haven't.
No, especially with that level of money. It's just extraordinary, really. The one thing I would say is I think Nkunku can be that player for them. I think
he's the question mark over him, but potentially could do it because of the record he's had at Leipzig.
Because right? I think if you go all the way back actually to when he was at PSG, I mean, I remember thinking in the summer when they sold Nkunku and Moussa Diaby, who's obviously pitched up at Aston Villa now, I remember thinking they were making a big mistake, but especially a big mistake with Nkunku, because he was more of a wide player at that time, or an attacking midfielder, and he's played more games at centre forward since in the back half of his spell at Leipzig. But he's someone who, in terms of creating and goal scoring, it's not just the goals in the Bundesliga. You know, he's got a Champions League hat trick away at Manchester City. He's proved himself on every level he's played. And even when he was at PSG, he never looked out of his depth. You bring him on with all the stars, and there was no bedding himself in and trying to get a few nice touches for confidence. He believed he belonged there from the very beginning, and he did. But when we're talking about Chelsea breaking strikers, I mean, they managed to break him in pre-season before he even played a proper game. Hopefully he comes back and he's
good. That was Ed Sheeran, I think.
That was Ed Sheeran's fault. Yeah. Probably not even in the top 10 worst things he's done, really. But I think,
he hasn't even got the decency to be injured by a decent singer-songwriter.
No, exactly. But I think it seems difficult to put them in a situation where you say, you've got to wait for him. Because, you know, their season could be in a bit of a hole by the time he comes back. But the point you make about Sterling is absolutely right. Because the thing people always miss about Sterling is where he's most effective in recent years. Not just for club, for England as well. You pop him in those central areas and he makes things happen. So, you know, he may not look like a centre-forward physically, but there's no reason he couldn't play there a bit. I mean, you know, they persevered with Kai Havertz, and I think there were even greater doubts over whether he can carry off the centre-forward role, to be perfectly honest. I think Sterling can do it.
Yeah, it felt to me with Havertz, just because he's actually pretty good at headers, People thought, oh, he's definitely a centre forward. So that's really interesting. And I think, you know, Chelsea fans, for obvious reasons, will just be counting down the days till Nkunku is available for selection again. But look, I want to these Ramble Reacts episodes are supposed to be rapid fire, quick in and out episodes for people to enjoy when they're on the way to the game today or tomorrow or whatever.
I can't mention Jose Mourinho, Romelu Lukaku, or any of those things, right?
No, you've already got like a chart-topping European show of your own, mate. That I think you've recorded.
Yeah, they're total strangers to the Premier League. Why would I mention them on here?
Yeah. Don't air your dirty laundry in public, Andy. You've asked for something to be put on the running order. It's been turned down by not just me but the production team as well. You know, take your medicine. You know, it'll wait till Thursday, I'm sure. But what I was gonna say was, we are gonna wrap up shortly. But before we do, I think it's important that we give a last word to Luton here, even if it isn't necessarily as positive a word as we'd like. A couple of things from me. Oh, before I do that, actually, I should also say that Malo Gusto had a good game. 2 assists for him starting at right back for Chelsea.
Really good
he
player.
Looks like a really interesting player.
And it's funny, when he did sign, like loads of people were saying, well, he's stunting his development, etc., etc., completely overlooking, A, the fact that Reece James can play in midfield, I think, in the medium term, and B, his injury record.
I completely agree. So yeah, look out for him. He might be a really good play in Fantasy Premier League as well, but that's another point. On the Luton thing to end with, you know, I mean, how will they fare this season? I mean, Jamie Carragher said this week that being an Everton fan is the most miserable existence in Premier League history. are Luton possibly going to challenge for that honour? Or I kind of feel like they might. And I would actually be quite happy for Luton fans to throw that in my face come May if they managed to do the miraculous and stay in the league, because I've got no beef with them whatsoever. I think, you know, they're an interesting case study. I'm really pleased to see them having a go in the top flight. I think it's a cool thing. But I you know, you bring in a Ross Barkley. Let's talk about it through the lens of Ross Barkley, for example. You know,
oh, that's not.
I was pleased to see him not playing in a suit jacket and shorts as you feared he might yesterday, or in jeans. Like Harry Maguire and that famous FIFA mod. But look, Ross Barkley is an interesting signing. As you said to yourself, he didn't do too badly at his previous club. He's obviously got talent. He's got experience at this level. He's played at international level, etc., etc. But here's the thing. You know, taking that back to the game last night, Ross Barkley ain't going to help you away at Stamford Bridge. Because he's not going to get enough of the ball. And Ross Barkley can't win a game for you without the ball. And I'm sure he's game, and I'm sure he covers grass, and I'm sure he does well without the ball. But if for some reason it feels to me like if you're going to set up like they set up, how does Ross Barkley help you? You know more about tactics than me, Andy. Maybe you can tell me. How much effect can Ross Barkley have for Luton, particularly away from home?
Well, you need him closer to Carlton Morris. I think that's pretty clear for starters. I think he could feed off
but
him.
He can't get up there, can
quite
he?
Nicely given the opportunity. Well, no. I mean, not away at Chelsea when they've got like, you know, 20% of the ball. How much percentage of the ball do you think they'll get against Manchester City? By the way,
well, exactly. It's frightening. They're 32% or just under 33% at Stamford Bridge.
Right. Okay.
Nowhere near that is the answer.
Right, yeah. I mean, it'll be below Bournemouth at Dean Court against
I don't quite know what
Manchester
the record
City
is.
Sort of levels.
I don't know what the record for a low percentage is, but I imagine they'll probably challenge it.
Yeah, somewhere around the 15 mark, isn't it? Yeah, look, firstly, in terms of Luton's season as a whole, I think, firstly, you have to wait for the transfer window to shut because there's probably business to be done there. And even without them going out and spending lavishly, there will be opportunities, I think, in the last week of the transfer window, in players that could do with a platform and haven't got a place elsewhere. So they've got work to do. Secondly, I want to see them play at home. I think that's a big thing as well. But things can change. I mean, you know, you look at a Sheffield United fan who we know very well, was very pessimistic about them going into this season. I expect he still is, but
it's not helping Luton,
think,
is it?
No, I think, but it's a good comparison. I think because they're two teams who, the way everyone has looked at it, and I'm sure that'll be reflected in our predictions at the end of the season when we open each other's envelopes, that most people think Luton and Sheffield United aren't really going to get out the bottom two, and so Everton and their miserable existence might miss that remaining relegation place because that is the way that most people are looking at it. But I think you look at the way that Sheffield United performed in the second half last week at Nottingham Forest, you look at the emergence of Gustavo Hammer, you look at other players that they might get in. We talked on the Ramble yesterday about Mama Balde maybe pitching up there. I think it would be absolutely great for them and a step up from what they've got already. This isn't over. It's just the start. And if you look at some of the numbers in terms of points tallies that it's taken to stay up the last couple of seasons, let's not write them off just yet.
Mm. No, fair point. I think it would be silly to write anyone off at this point in the season.
You're not going to need 40 to stay up this season.
No, well, you never do anyway these days.
No,
I mean,
no.
And the only person who writes teams off in August, as we all know, as regular Ramble listeners will know, is David Moyes. and I'm not fit to lace his boots. I'm not fit to pay him as a ferryman, so I couldn't ever say that about Luton or any team at this point in the Premier League. Because, you know, football surprises you. Even when people take all these measures to control every aspect of the game, you can't control all of it, and it does have the capacity to surprise you. All right, thank you for listening to today's Ramble Reacts. It's really great to have you along. I hope whichever game you're travelling to, or whether you're just staying at home, look after yourselves and stay safe. And we hope you enjoy the weekend that Marcus officially opened for us yesterday. Marcus, Jim and I will be back on Monday to take in all the weekend's action. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble. And please remember to subscribe on your podcast app. That's it from us. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye, Ramblers. And remember, if you are staying at home, as Luke said, don't watch any of the Saturday 3 o'clocks. I'm sure you wouldn't be that devious.
Absolutely not. That is the most heinous of crimes, and you all know it. And it's goodbye from me as well.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.